Today's scripture reading is Psalm 67. May God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face to shine upon us. Selah. That your way may be known on earth, your saving power among all nations. Let the people praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you judge the peoples with equity and guide the nations upon earth. Selah. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. The earth has yielded its increase. God, our God, shall bless us. God shall bless us. Let all the ends of the earth fear him.
And, 1727, a group of 300 individuals known as the Moravians began a prayer meeting. It was 24/7 around the clock prayer meeting. That prayer meeting lasted for over 100 years. You ask yourself, what's the fruit of a group of people who commit themselves to pray? The fruit of that, and remember this is a really small group of individuals, 300 people in total. The fruit of that is within 50 years, that small group of people sent out over 300 missionaries to the nations, never to return, leaving home, leaving friends, leaving family, leaving possessions to share the gospel to people that they don't know. They went to the Caribbean, they went to North and South America, they went to the Arctic, they went to Africa, they went to the Far East. Later, 1806, a group of five college students, let no one despise you for your youth. Five college students gathered together in a field. They had one book with them. It was a book written by William Carey, a missionary to India, about, it was really his thesis on you should get involved in missions. You're called to go. And they met together in that field to talk about this book and to pray for missions. While they were praying, a thunderstorm descended upon them. They're in this open field. But the thunderstorm, the rain, the lightning wasn't going to end this prayer meeting. They took refuge in a nearby haystack and sat under it, and they just kept praying. They kept praying until something happened within them. Something broke loose within the hearts of all five of these men. They would meet back regularly in this hayfield, this prayer meeting, and it would be later be known as the haystack prayer meetings. What's the result of five people that multiplies to 100 people gathering together weekly to pray? Well, the result is 5,000 missionaries from that prayer group sent to 34 different nations in the world to herald the good news that Jesus is the Savior of the world. Bow down and worship him. That's really the message of our psalm today. Psalm 67 is a prayer. It's an ancient prayer of Israel. God, bless us so that your way may be known on the earth, that the world, that the nations, that the peoples of the earth, the ethnicities in this world, would see you and give you the glory that's due your name. The psalm says, let the peoples praise you, O God. In case you missed it, he's going to repeat it. Let all the peoples praise you. And in case you missed that, later in the chapter, he's going to repeat it again. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Prayer has always played a vital role in missions. You remember the words of Jesus? The harvest is plentiful. The workers are few. Therefore, what should we do? Worry? Talk about it some more? Take up an offering? Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest field. And this psalm is a prayer from God's people to God that he would use his people to make himself known in all the earth. This, I'll just let you know right off the bat, this is my favorite psalm in all of the psalms. I wish I had about 6 hours to teach you this psalm because there's so much here. I could literally spend 6 hours just talking about it. Fortunately for you, we don't have 6 hours. We have to settle for 35 minutes of preaching. It's not enough, but hopefully it's enough to get you sparked, to get you started, to go back to this psalm, to find out how great our God is and how worthy He is to receive global worship. So three things that I want to do today. I first want to talk about the fuel for missions. What is it that's going to drive us to go to the nations? What is it that's going to drive us to give sacrificially to the nations? Secondly, I want to talk about the benefit of missions. What is it doing when we go and share the gospel? When God is glorified among the nations, what's it doing for the nations? And then lastly, I want to talk about the strategy of missions. How are we going to complete this task of the nations praising God who is worthy of praise? So first, we look at the fuel of missions. And I hope you understand what I mean when I say the fuel of missions. If you have a car, that car will not run without some type of fuel source, petrol, electric. There's been a couple of times in my life, my wife could tell you, she probably enjoyed telling you, when I was driving my car and I accidentally ran out of gas and it came puttering to a stop and it refused to go any further. When you learn in that moment that as much as you hope for your car to go, it cannot run unless there's fuel in the car. And the same is true with missions. You will not go to the nations. You will not give sacrificially, not just your wealth, but your children, your very life, your possessions, your dreams. You're not going to give that stuff up unless there's a fuel that's propelling you to go and to give for the nations. What's the fuel of missions? What's the fuel that's driving this psalmist? It's the glory of God. That God is worthy of worldwide worship. Listen to the psalm. God, we want you to bless us so that your way may be known on the earth, your saving power among all the nations. Let the peoples, all ethnicities, the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. That's the fuel for missions. I recently read an article of a gas station in Ontario, Canada. They had a petrol station, a petrol pump, and then they had a diesel pump. And the big truckers that come in, you know, the tankers that fill up the gas station, well, the diesel tanker accidentally filled the petrol pump full of diesel. Now, if you're not aware of this, this is big problems, right? If your car runs on petrol, you can't put diesel into it. And so person after person was driving up to this pump, and they were putting in the wrong fuel for their car. So some cars, they started, they got maybe a block away, and boom. Some cars maybe got 2 blocks away. Some cars, they got almost all the way home, but the result is the same. If you put in the wrong fuel, it's destruction for the car. And the same is true for missions. You put in the wrong fuel for missions, and it's devastating for missions, and it's devastating to the church, and it's devastating to the people that you go to share the gospel with. And the sad reality is there's lots of churches throughout history, lots of preachers throughout history that are giving you the wrong fuel for missions. And church member after church member are pulling up to the pump, unaware, and they're just guzzling in the wrong fuel for missions. The fuel for missions is the glory of God, that Jesus has been crucified, dead, buried, resurrected, and He is worthy of worldwide worship. That's the fuel for missions. But some people, they'll tell you, oh, the fuel for missions is guilt. And they'll try to guilt you into going. They'll try to guilt you into giving. They'll try to guilt you into having a conversation about Jesus. And that fuel maybe will run for a block or two, but eventually it will break down on you and it will not last. You know, at City Church, we have this thing called 1,000 Gospel Conversations. Currently, we're at number 46. We've had 46 gospel conversations in the city. And I rejoice and praise Jesus for those 46 conversations. But I don't want you to have a conversation because you're guilted into having a conversation. Oh, shame on you for not sharing the gospel. Oh, if you were a good Christian, you should share the gospel. That's not the fuel for a gospel conversation. The fuel for a gospel conversation is you have met Jesus, you've been transformed by Jesus, and you can't help but share, to speak about what you have seen and heard. That's the fuel for having a gospel conversation. That's the fuel for missions. When you get a God-entrenched vision of who God is and how worthy He is, how can you not but speak about Him to other people? Growing up, I was the shyest person you would have ever met on the face of the planet. And I remember the night I met Jesus, something in me changed. So that the very first thing I did, no one told me to do it. No one guilted me into doing it. I just encountered the glory of God, and it was a natural expression. The very first thing I did was I went home, and I had a conversation with my mom and dad about Jesus. Do you know Jesus as Savior? Have you encountered Jesus yet? That's the fuel for missions. When you are changed by Jesus, when you love Jesus, it propels you to be missional. Now, this may sound strange, so kind of hold with me for a while. Compassion for people is the wrong fuel for missions. It's true we as Christians should love our neighbor. We should love the lost. It's true that we as Christians should have compassion for the lost. It's true that we as Christians should weep tears over the fact that there's whole groups of people that have rejected Jesus and they're going to spend an eternity away from Jesus. But the fuel for missions isn't our compassion for that person, because your compassion, I hate to tell you this, isn't strong enough to propel you into missions for the long term. Because what happens when you go to a people that don't want you? Where's your compassion then? What happens when you go to share the gospel with a group of people that begin to persecute you? What happens when you go share the gospel with someone and they kill your child? Where's your compassion for them then? What happens is you say, well, they're not worthy of the gospel. And it's true, there's a lot of people in this world that's not worthy of the gospel. In fact, none of us are worthy of the gospel. And our human compassion will say, well, the rapist, he doesn't deserve the gospel message. He doesn't deserve to be saved. Well, the murderer who killed that little child doesn't deserve the gospel message. Your compassion runs only so far. That person who hurt me deeply, he doesn't deserve to hear the good news of Jesus. And it's true, he doesn't deserve it. But guess what else is also true? Jesus deserves worship from the rapist. Jesus deserves worship from the murderer. Jesus deserves worship from the person who has hurt you in unspeakable ways. That's the fuel for missions, that Jesus is worthy of worship. And that is the only thing that will propel us long term. You see, the Bible is overwhelmingly about God. Overwhelmingly about God. And you know, throughout history, there's people that have taken the Bible and they've turned it into a book about themselves. They've made themselves the main character of the Bible. But God is the main character of the Bible. And as you read the Bible, if you really read the Bible, you're going to discover that God does everything for His glory. And He calls us to do everything for His glory. You remember what the New Testament says, whatever you do, whether in word or in deed, do all for people. No, it's not what it says, right? Do all because you have compassion for people. No, it says, whatever you do, whether in word or in deed, do all for the glory of God. Isaiah says, I am God, there is no other. I will not give my glory to another. And if I had time, I could go through 30, 40 verses with you just in the Old Testament about how God is doing all things for his glory. And that's just scratching the surface of how God does everything for his glory. God created us for his glory. Isaiah 43 reminds us of that. You turn to Colossians 1 and it says everything was created by God. Everything was created through Jesus and everything was created for Jesus. Why did he create the world? So that he might display his glory and receive glory from humanity. God chose Israel as his chosen people for his glory, Isaiah 49:3. God saves us from sin for the glory of God. That's Ephesians chapter 1. God rescued Israel from Egypt, Isaiah 49, Psalm 106, for God's glory. Jesus answers our prayer, John 14, for God's glory. Jesus went to the cross, John 17, Father, glorify your name. He went to the cross for God's glory. Man is not the main character of the Bible. Man is not the main character in missions. To put man at the center of the Bible, to put man at the center of missions is humanism. It's not Christianity. And that fuel, man, will not get you very far. But when you get a God-sized vision for the glory of God, you can't help but go and share. What was it that drove such a small group of people, 300 Moravians, what was it that drove them to send their sons and their daughters and their nephews and nieces and their neighbors and their best friends to places where they'll never return, they'll never see them again? What was it that drove them to do that? It was the glory of God. That's the mission call of the Moravians. Two brothers, they heard about an island where the island was full of slaves and they didn't know Jesus. And the only way to get on that island was to be a slave yourself. So they sold themselves into slavery. They took the money that they got from selling themselves into slavery to buy passage on the ship that was going to the island. They're going to spend the rest of their lives as slaves. They're on the ship, these two Moravian brothers. Their friends and family are on the dock to see them off. As the ship is sailing away, the Moravian brothers call out, "Those poor people, that's why we're going." No. "It's going to be a lot of fun. That's why we're going." No. "It's our duty. We're supposed to do this. That's why we're going." No. They call out, "May the Lamb who was slain receive the reward of his suffering." And for over 100 years, that was the battle cry of the Moravians to send sons and daughters to far off places and never return, because Jesus has died and he's worthy of worship. Not just from us. It's too small a thing, Isaiah 49. It's too small a thing for him to redeem us only. He's the God of the whole world and we must herald it to the whole world. That's the fuel of missions. What's the benefit of missions? When we go and we share and people hear and they begin to worship and glorify God, what's the benefit of missions? Well, the passage says, let the nations be glad. Let the nations, because God has revealed himself, the nations will sing for joy. That's the benefit of missions. That's how we started our singing this morning, right? We were singing, "Oh, happy day that God is alive and he wants a relationship with us and he is showing us his glory." That's a happy day. Now I imagine, as I spoke about God and his glory and God doing everything for his glory and the book being about God and it not being about you, some of you probably felt a little offended at that. God kind of sounds like a jerk. And if it's not okay for me to be selfish, why is it okay for God to be selfish? Why can God choose to do everything for his glory when I can't do everything for my glory? And you think that because your great, 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 great grandfather, Adam, and your great, 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 great grandmother, Eve, thought the same thing. Satan comes into the garden. They're created in the image of God, put in a garden to be in the presence of the glory of God. And Satan says, oh, God's holding out on you. God isn't letting you be God. God isn't letting you determine what is right and what is wrong. And he says, why don't you reach out and steal that glory that's only reserved for God, but really it should be yours. Life should be about you. Life should be about your choices and what you want in this world. And God's kind of a jerk to say everything's about him. Reach out and grab that glory and take it for yourself. And that's what they did. They reached out to grab glory that only belongs to God. They were in his image, but it wasn't enough. They wanted to be God. They wanted life to revolve around them. And the moment they touched that fruit, their life was ruined. And I'm telling you, don't buy into the lie. Don't ruin your life by trying to grab glory that only belongs to God. The greatest gift that God has given the world is his glory and his refusal to make life about you. Life would be miserable, not just for you, but for the world, if God lived for you. The greatest good that comes to the world is for God to glorify himself. That's what the psalm says, that when God glorifies himself, it makes us glad. That when Jesus is made much of, it brings us joy. The nations will be glad and sing for joy. The psalm reminds us that God is in the business of maximizing his glory, but that is to our benefit. Maybe an illustration is needed here. Imagine a basketball game. I hate basketball with all of my heart because I'm really bad at basketball. But let's imagine a basketball game. It's the fourth inning, quarter. What's it called? It's a quarter, right? Yeah, it's the fourth quarter. There's 1 second on the clock. Your team is down 2 points. You have the ball. Coach has called timeout. You're looking at the shot clock. It's 1 second left. You got enough time to inbound the ball and take a shot. And as you're in that huddle with the coach, there's one player on the team that's clearly the best player. He scored 60 points tonight. Everybody's looking at him, right? Now imagine the best player, the one guy that you want to have the ball, he looks at you guys and says, you know, I've scored 60 points. I think that's enough. I'm going to sit down on the bench and let you guys finish the game. That would be the most selfish thing he could do. And the greatest thing he could do was say, give me the ball. I mean, can you imagine if he said, look, guys, I know what's going to happen. We're going to go out there. You're going to throw the ball to me. I'm going to take a shot. It's going to be nothing but net. We're going to win the game. People are going to go wild. You're going to lift me up on your shoulders, and announcers are going to talk about me. And, you know, people are going to be screaming my name, and newspapers are going to be writing about me. And so maybe I'll just take a bench because I don't want it to be about me. And we'll let the B team come in and finish the game. You say, no, don't do that at all. You're the one person we want on the court because you're the best person to take this shot. And what happens? He goes in, and as he predicted, everything happens. He takes a shot, nothing but net. The people go crazy. They're rejoicing. They lift him up on his shoulders, and the camera is on him, and the announcers are talking about him, and the newspapers are writing about him. And if you pan down, because the cameras are on him, right? If you pan down, where you are holding him on your shoulders, what do you see? You see a smile. You see joy. You're not jealous that he won the game. You're joyful that you get to participate in his glory. He has not been selfish and held it for himself, but his victory becomes your great joy. That's the news of the gospel, that when God is glorified, we are most satisfied. We are most to be enjoyed. We get to enjoy his presence. That's the benefit. What a wonderful message that we get to herald. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy. That's the message. It's the good news. The gospel means good news. You're not a used door-to-door salesman going around trying to pawn something off on people that they don't want, nor do they need. You get to share the message that the world is looking for. Everybody in the world is looking for joy. Everybody in the world is looking for gladness. Everybody in the world is looking for purpose. And that's the message of the gospel. Surrender to King Jesus and you get gladness and joy and purpose, not just in this life, but for all eternity. That's the benefit. We get to enjoy. We get to share in the glory of God. That's a wonderful message that we get to herald. Psalm 16:11 says, "In your presence there is fullness of joy, and at your right hand there are pleasures forevermore." It's the message that you get to share. You know, you don't walk around saying, "Well, what do I tell them?" You know, I mean, you know, I'm a little embarrassed about talking about Jesus. Why would you be embarrassed? Hey, you want joy? Let me tell you about joy. You're looking for pleasure? Let me tell you about pleasure forevermore. And if you've experienced Jesus, if you've really experienced Jesus, you've experienced gladness and joy and pleasures, and now you get to go and share that news with the nations. Thirdly, what's the strategy of mission? Well, the strategy is prayer. This is a prayer to God. And it's a twofold prayer. The first part of the prayer, he says, "God, bless us." Well, he begins being gracious. "Be gracious to us, bless us, make your face to shine upon us." That's the first part. God, bless us. And the second part is so that you can be known among the nations. God, bless us. Use us to make yourself famous on the earth. That's the prayer. That's the strategy for missions. I just want to rejoice with you for a moment because we're a church that's actually done that recently. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Zhengzhou and the floods that were there, and we asked you to give. God's blessed you financially. Will you use that blessing to make himself known among the nations? And you gave 127,000 RMB. That money, yeah, we praise God for that. That's bless us that you may make yourself known among the nations. And that money was sent to an organization that's like-minded. They're going to use that for food. They've used that for food. They're going to use that for reconstruction of the city. They're going to use that for counseling for people that need counseling. But it's not just food, and it's not just construction. It's not just counseling, but it's food and construction and counseling through a biblical worldview, through a biblical lens, that our hope is that they find fullness of joy and pleasure forevermore at the hands of Jesus. So I encourage you, keep praying. Pray for that organization as they rebuild, as they do counseling, that opportunities for the gospel is clearly given so that the good news can be shared with people in that city. That's the prayer. God, bless us. Oh, that's a prayer. That's the most common prayer that Christians pray today. Right, just this morning before we started our service, we went in the back and we gathered together, and I didn't count, but there was, like, you know, word after word, "God bless the service today. God bless the singing today. God bless the sermon today. God bless the people as they come in today. God, you know, bless, 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 bless." I mean, that's the most common prayer in all of Christendom. So it's a good and appropriate prayer to pray, but make sure you finish the prayer. "Bless us so that you might be displayed through that blessing in my own life." Now, how does that play out when we say God bless us and God blesses us, and then we turn around and give him glory for that? Well, here's a picture of Sidney McLaughlin. And she's looking at the clock after a race, and she's realizing that she is the first woman to break the 52-second mark in the 400-meter hurdles. She posts this on her Instagram. Now, what's the caption that she adds to this? Obviously, the fastest woman broke a record. This is a blessing from God. God has blessed her with speed. What's she going to do with that blessing? Oh, God, thank you for my coaches. You know, I just want to thank the coaches for working so hard. Give glory to the coaches. Oh, go USA. She's going to give glory to her country. Oh, look at me. I'm the fastest woman in the world. Give glory to herself. No, this is what she writes. This is the face of a woman who is in awe of God. I no longer run for self-recognition, but to reflect His perfect will that's already set in stone. I don't deserve anything, but by grace through faith, Jesus has given me everything. Records come and go. The glory of God is eternal. Thank you, Father. Here's a person who gets Psalm 67. You have blessed me with speed, not for myself, not for my country, not for any other man on this planet. You've blessed it. You've given this to me that I might display your glory among the nations. It's an opportunity. It's a platform to make God known. That's the story of the Bible. Story after story after story in the Bible is how God blesses His people to make Himself known. The parting of the Red Sea, you remember they go out there and Pharaoh's coming and the sea's in front of them and they cry out to God. And it's basically the first half of this prayer. God bless us. God do something. He's coming. Bless us. And God does bless them. He parts the sea. He allows them to go through on dry ground. But that's the first half of the prayer. The second half of the prayer is found in Joshua 6:25, Joshua 2. This is Rahab. They go to Jericho, and Rahab says, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. We have heard. That's Psalm 67. Bless us that you, your way may be known on the earth. She says, we have heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea before you when you came out. And the fulfillment of Psalm 67 is, let the peoples praise you. Let all the peoples praise you. And later we read in Joshua 6, but Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel as a worshiper of Yahweh, brought the nations in to worship Him until this day. And so the challenge today is to boldly approach the throne of grace and ask bold prayers. God, bless us. I mean, we pray that prayer all the time. God, bless my business. God, bless this business deal. God, bless my finances. God, bless my visa. I want to stay in China. Let it come through. God, bless my marriage. I mean, we're always praying this prayer. Boldly approach the throne of grace and pray for God to bless you, but finish the prayer so that God's glory would be displayed through that blessing. I mean, look at Joseph in Egypt. Joseph wasn't blessed, second in command, for his own glory, but for the nations. So we read in Genesis 41, moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain. God was making Himself famous, showing Himself to the nations through the blessing of Joseph. And maybe God's put you in a position of power. He's blessed you with a position. The question is, are you using that position? Are you using that blessing to make Him famous? Look at the wisdom of Solomon. The blessing of wisdom wasn't for Solomon alone. 1 Kings 10. Now when the queen of Sheba, a non-Israelite, heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, of Yahweh, she came to test him with hard questions. And the end result, she says, the report was true that I heard in my own land of your words and your salvation. And listen, non-Israelite, these are the words from her lips. Blessed be the Lord your God, has God blessed you with wisdom? Has he given you a scholarship here in China, given you an opportunity to study in China? That blessing is not for you alone. It's not for your family alone. It's not for your country to go back and help that country alone. That blessing is for the nations. While you're on campus receiving the blessing, are you being intentional about sharing the gospel, the good news, bringing joy, making the nations glad and sing for joy? Look at Daniel in the lion's den. The blessing was not for him alone. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples after God delivered Daniel, nations and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the Lord of Daniel. That's Psalm 67. The Lord will bless us. The Lord has blessed us. Let the nations fear him. He is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed. His dominion shall be to the end. Has God blessed you with the miracle? Has he blessed you with some type of deliverance? It's not for you alone. Are you making it known among the nations? Are you heralding the good news of what God has done in your life that the nations might hear, the nations might receive joy, that the Lamb who was slain would receive the reward of his suffering? Look at Boaz in Bethlehem. It wasn't just his business, his land, his wealth wasn't for him alone, but he used that blessing to care for orphans and widows and aliens and strangers. And Ruth, the Moabite, the non-Israelite from the nations, comes in and takes refuge under the wings of God in the field of Boaz. Has God blessed you with business? Has God blessed you with finances? Are you using it? The purpose of God giving it to you is that you would make him known among the nations. And what a wonderful opportunity we have to fulfill Psalm 67, because we live among the nations. The latest census says there's 67,000 expats in 62,000 expats in this city, in Beijing alone, from almost every nation on the planet. The nations are here. You have opportunity to speak the truth of the gospel to the nations. When my wife and I lived in the States, she worked for a missions organization, sending students on these two-week trips, and they would raise a lot of money to go and share the gospel. You see what God's done? God pays you to live in this city to share the gospel. You don't have to raise money. He's paid you. He's given you a job and a visa in this city among the nations. Full of the nations. And people are paying to come to you. They're buying airplane tickets to come to Beijing. They're going through 2-3 week quarantine to come to Beijing. The nations, God is sending, even in the midst of COVID, he's still sending the nations to Beijing. And he's placed you here to herald the good news to the nations. You have the opportunity. We have the opportunity to speak the good news that Jesus is alive. Joy is yours. So go boldly before the throne and say, God, bless me in whatever it is so that you will receive the glory that's due your name.